This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. It is a Monday morning, 1st of July, start of a new month. What have we got for you today? Well, going to begin by jumping into some of the top stories today. Election season globally. You got France, you got the United States, Biden, UK election coming up, and of course, petrol prices here in the UAE. They are falling again in July. Details and analysis of those. What else have we got for you? Emiratization, big focus today, because today, 1st of July, that's the day when the government starts fining people, or rather companies, 8,000 dirhams a month if they don't have the right number of Emiratis. Going to get the thoughts of one Emirati business leader. Mohammed Zamani is a partner at KPMG and also the recruitment specialist, Jas Sanger from Mackenzie Jones Solutions. Finally, Brandy loves what she calls tentonomics, the economics of tents and shading areas in the summer that so many restaurants and cafes spend quite a bit of money on. What's the deal? Minnie Wallington has been answering that question. She is with Arena Group. All that to come. First up, though, those top stories.
Obviously, keeping an eye on all things locally for you. We'll be addressing a few of the local headlines in just a few moments' time, but also keeping an eye on international news stories. France's far-right party, National Rally, or the RN, emerged ahead in the first round of parliamentary elections yesterday. That's according to the exit polls. French President Emmanuel Macron called for a, quote, broad Republican and Democratic alliance against the anti-immigration party, urging another high turnout in the second round of voting, which will take place on July the 7th. The RN won about 34% of the vote. Exit polls from Ipsos, IFOP and others showed that was ahead of the leftist and centrist rivals, including Mr. Macron's Together Alliance. So that's what's happening over in France. What does that mean, though, for us here in the UAE? Dan Richards is a man that we have posed this question to. Dan Richards is the senior economist, Emirates MBD, and we asked, what are the key economic implications of round one of the results in France?
French asset classes have already been under pressure in recent weeks after President Macron announced this snap parliamentary election after weak European election results for his centrist movement. And uncertainty is always the worst thing for markets. The benchmark CAC index has already sold off since the announcement and closed down 2% on the week on Friday, which is a much greater fall than seen in comparable other European indices. And French bond spreads have also been widening. And given that there's another week to go, investors will have to wait for now to see how the dust will settle.
Let's stay with the elections if we can. Why? Because obviously it's not that long ago that we had that face-off, if you like, between the two men over in the United States, Biden and Trump. We wanted to get Dan's thoughts on this one, staying with the elections. As an economist, what was the significance, if there is any significance, of the ongoing calls for Joe Biden to step aside after his car crash performance in the debate last week?
There have been some quite audible voices in media and politics urging President Biden to step aside as the Democrats pick to run as president in November after his weak performance in the one-on-one debate with Republican candidate Donald Trump. Nevertheless, for the time being, the White House at least remains adamant that Biden will run and that he will perform more strongly than he did last week in the coming months. Until and unless there is a change in this, then the impacts on markets of this noise will be pretty minimal. And indeed, what really moved markets on Friday was the US PCE data release rather than any political developments the previous night.
Obviously, election fever gripping many parts of the world. Brandy, your attention being focused on which election this week?
Oh, what are we looking at? We're looking at France and we're looking at the UK, aren't we?
Yeah. So are you doing, you're doing all things on July the 4th or not? You still got your big July the 4th election party going on or not? Or is it just such a foregone conclusion that you've given up on it?
plane tickets are being negotiated at the moment. We've looked actually at the election calendar for all of this year to the point that we've been like, well, the Austrians are having an election. Bit of saccator, that could work. It's not just the elections that are happening this week, though, that have got people talking this weekend, hasn't it? I mean, the other big one has been what isn't happening until towards the end of the year, and that is, should Biden be standing or not?
Exactly. Yeah, we, of course, will focus on that one for you, as we've just been hearing from Dan Richards on that. The other big talker of the morning is, of course, the petrol price as well. Up, down?
Down. By around 5%, just under, whether it's super or special that you are putting in your tank. Obviously, fuel prices go into our inflation basket. What does it all mean for the cost of living?
This, of course, follows on from a more than 6% fall logged in June. So taken together, this should help to ease price pressures in the country in the coming month. Transport accounts for around 10% of Dubai's inflation basket, with petrol prices making up a fair proportion of that. So this has implications for headline CPI inflation here. Although it should be noted that global oil prices have picked up in June, so pump prices will likely reflect that next month. Dubai's annual inflation rate showed to 3.8% year-on-year in May from 3.9% in April, and the average inflation over the first 5 months of the year was 3.6%.
That's Dan's take on it from Emirates NBD. We also got the opinions of Matt Stanley, head of market engagement, EMEA and APA at Kepler.
It's to do with methodology. So it's to do with how the government and, you know, since deregulation of petrol prices in 2014 by the UAE government, they've largely followed what's happening in international markets. It's based on a weighted average, i.e. the price of gasoline prices over the course of the month, not just where they close at the end of the month. We saw a large sell-off at the start of the month, and that dragged down the average price for June. I foolishly forgot that, and all I looked at was the current price instead of what the monthly average was doing. But look, what happened was on Friday, when RBOB, which is the international gasoline benchmark on the NYMEX in New York, where that settles, that closed up 5% compared to the end of May. So the price did rise, but the weighted average was lower across the course of the month.
At least he's honest. Matt Stanley there giving us his take on the fluctuating fuel prices at the moment.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, let's talk emiratization now. Mohamed Zamani is a partner within the audit unit at KPMG Lower Gulf. He's also head of emiratization. He is a proud Emirati. Mohamed, ahlan wa sahlan.
Ahlan wa sahlan. Thank
Good
you very much
to
for
see you
me
this
here.
Morning. Thanks for coming in. We'll do the interview in English, if that's okay. So, first of all, bigger picture. Today is the day that the fines or contributions, call them what they will, kick in for small businesses of 50 employees or more to hire at least one Emirati. Just give us some context on this first, the UAE's emiratization drive.
Thank you very much for having me here, Richard. Look, I think in terms of emiratization, as you know, the whole drive is the strategic priority for the country, for the nation, to ensure that we hire, we develop the right talent to drive the economy in the future. In KPMG, we've started our emiratization many, many years ago. Today we are at nearly 13%. So the initiatives...
13, 1-3.
That's right, yeah. And in terms of where we are now, the compliance piece that you're talking about is one piece, but if you take a step back, there's lots of other elements to emiratization. There is a career development, there's a retention, there's the ensuring, the empowering Emiratis, dealing with the Gen Z to ensure that we give them the right purpose to drive value in the future.
So of those 13% at KPMG, what kind of roles are they fulfilling? Now, you clearly are an accountant, you're ICAEW qualified, you're a partner within the audit division of KPMG, and that's what we think of as the core of the big four, audit and accounting, but they do so much more than that. So of your Emirati colleagues, what would be a rough breakdown of what they do? Are they mainly accountants or are they doing other stuff?
So we have Emiratis now across all our service lines in audit, advisory, tax and support functions. When we started our journey over 10 years ago, we had a handful of Emiratis in audit. But today we literally have across all levels, be it juniors to partners like myself, managerial roles across all parts of the business in Dubai and Abu Dhabi.
Okay. How difficult is it to hire them and fill those positions? Because the war for talent is real. Apart from the other three of the big four who will be looking to hire those people, others as well.
See, the way I look at it, the competition is not only the big four. The competition is the whole private sector in the whole country over the top talent. I think in terms of attracting, it's not very easy to find the right talent, that are suitable for the organization. But I think that's, again, that's not the most challenging part. The most challenging part is to ensure that we create a thriving culture where they're truly integrated, where we can actually retain the Emiratis. I think that's the challenge today where with the private sector.
So you're an employer of choice at KPMG, and the big four are. They're the kind of firm that people, whatever nationality, aspire to work for. Most companies, though, are not an employer of choice. We're talking about today small businesses with 50 employees or more. If you're a printing company in Alcoz or a steel manufacturer in Ajman, it's not as glamorous as working for the big four in your swanky offices in One Central down near the trade centre. How do companies like that approach this? I know it's not your job, but just again, give us some background and context.
You're right. I think we're lucky that we are KPMG and people would want to join the big four. But I think in terms of some of the new sectors that have been impacted by the compliance, such as the example you gave, such as the contracting, hospitality, I think there's some work that has to be done from the schools, from the universities to upskill them, to ensure they're ready to join these new sectors where they've never had Emiratis before. And number one is to train the Emiratis and the Gen Zs to be acceptable for these sectors and new roles in the country. But also the private sector has to do some work in terms of readiness and acceptance of having Emiratis embedded within their organizations.
Sanjay's written in, a number of people have hand saying, we'd like to hire more Emiratis, but salaries are so high in the government that we cannot compete with those. Now, I know, Sanjay, there is a subsidy effectively for Emirati employees. If you're going to go and work in the private sector, you get, I think it's 7,000 dirhams a month extra from the government to top up your salary. But this isn't issue. How do companies overcome that?
It's not only the salary. I think it's creating the providing the right experience, empowering Emiratis, and providing a promising career progression pathway that contributes to retaining Emiratis. Salary is one aspect. Yes, many Emiratis are like everyone else would be. Inclined to take on higher salary, likes of the government and etc. But in reality, the caliber of people that the big four attract are the ones that have the outlook of becoming the future leaders of the UAE, having the career progression, accelerated career progression, and lots of other contributors to them wanting to join and stay in the big four.
What about the cut and thrust of the private sector? I mean, it can be a brutal environment, can't it? With a multinational company or a local company, you've got office politics, you've got to climb the ladder. Some bosses are empathetic and are great leaders. Many are not. Many are just plain nasty and horrible. And targets are very, very severe in the private sector. I mean, you as an audit partner, you're going to have tough targets for new business every year. And if you don't meet them, you're out. That's just the reality of a high-level consultancy, isn't it? It's tough in the private sector. How, when you chat not just with people in a work context about it, but with your mates over a cup of coffee at home bakery on a Saturday morning, what do they say about working in the private sector?
You're right. Private sector, working in the private sector is not easy. It's demanding, long hours. But the reality is we're also dealing with a huge population of motivated Emiratis, people who genuinely want to make a difference in the country, people who have the education, have the awareness that working those long hours in this difficult environment will actually accelerate the career progression. It'll create, give them the thriving opportunity to lead, to have some leading roles in the UAE. So whilst, it's not easy, but at the same time, we are finding the Emirati talent that are up for it.
But you're not getting mates saying to you, Mohammed, you're working all these hours, you're working 12, 14 hours a day, I finish work at 2:30. What are you doing, Habibi? Do you get any of that?
All the time.
And what do you say to them? 30 seconds left. What do you say to them?
In simple terms, 1 year in what I do is equal to maybe 2-3 years elsewhere. So the fact that in 13 years I've made partner in KPMG is not an opportunity that every organization in this country can provide.
Great talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much indeed for getting up early and speak to us this morning, because you've got two jobs. You're an audit partner at a big four firm, KPMG, big job. Also head of amortization for KPMG. So we'll let you get back to your two jobs today. Mohammed Zamani, appreciate your time. Shukran.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Time now to talk emiratisation, if we can. Why? Because the deadline for UAE companies employing 50 or more workers to meet their half-yearly emiratisation target was yesterday. So you're waking up at a new dawn in many ways. What's it mean for you? Is it something you've ignored? What are the penalties for your company if you're not complying? Well, there's only one man that can answer those questions for us. It's the Managing Director of McKenzie Jones Solutions. He heads up their emiratisation team, has worked with the likes of Adyo and ENBD on all things emiratisation in recent months. It's a warm welcome to Jaz Sanger, who joins us live in the studio this morning. Jaz, thanks for joining. Yes.
Thank you very much for having me.
Can we start with a sort of overview on this one? I hate to use the word quotas. I hate to use the word sort of the rules and regulations. It's more an initiative by the government. But why this emiratisation initiative?
Look, the idea is, you know, UAE nationals, they're trying to boost their economy by 50% so, or 100%, so I say, from 400 billion GBP to 800 billion in the next 10 years. So they've set their target for 2026 to increase, you know, nationalisation 10% across board. So that's the target at the moment.
It's something that we've been made aware of for a long time. So anyone out there saying this is news to me, it is not news. You know, it's been very transparent. The initiative has been put in place, etc. Why is this morning significant in this? Because we get told about these deadlines time and time again. What deadline has just passed?
So the past, I mean, the target was 2% a year. So right now we're in 2024. We should be cumulative 6% by the end of the year, as in nationalisation target. Now, last year, Q3 2023, the government announced that we're going to do it bi-yearly. So 2% is split into half, so it's 1%. So 30th of June was a deadline to hit 1% target. Their reasoning behind that is so companies don't push it towards the end of the year and they hit their target and not struggle right towards the end.
So a number of company owners and CEOs will be listening into this morning going, okay, Talk numbers to me in terms of company numbers. So in the headline there, I mentioned that you've got to be a company employing 50 or more workers. Define a worker for me, Jaz.
Okay, so this comes down to the initiatives for skilled workers. Now, it's a bit, you know, it's quite judgmental what they call skilled workers. It comes into five categories. So you have to, you know, skilled workers, you might have 260 workers or such, of which only 220 are skilled. Now, the target of 50, you know, per person is, you know, you have to divide that works out around four local nationals that you need to employ. Now, you know, the violation is you need four during the whole year. Mm. The target is four. Now, any companies that are missing that during the year will be penalised up to 8,000 dirhams a month per person they're missing.
And that's per month as well. So we're not talking about an annual fine or anything like that.
No. So what you're talking about is per month, and this is a contribution, they call it. So it's going up year on year because they're trying to really push this. Started with 6,000 dirhams in 22. Right now it's 8,000 dirhams per person per month if you're missing the target. And they call it a contribution. So they're not calling it a fine or a penalty. A penalty is violation for falsifying your documents, and that's where the fines range from 100,000 dirhams to 500,000 dirhams for missing.
And these will be implemented?
These were implemented, yeah. There was 13,000, what the government reported, just over 13,000 companies that violated this by May this year. Now, you know, that may change.
This is part of the NAFIS initiative moving forward as well, the incentivization, if you like. There has been chat from a number of employees that it's all good and well, but they just can't find the talent at the moment. Is that one of the issues? What are the sort of hurdles you're finding at the moment?
Well, the biggest thing is, I mean, it's a grab for the best, should I say. So, you know, the good nationals and the good candidates are always going to get placed first, and it always happens. So, yeah, the common ground that we get from most clients is, where do we get this talent from? Mm. Now, they do exist, and that's one thing I'd like to say. I mean, a lot of people think they don't exist, and, you know, there's only one in, and, you know, one or two that are really impressive. I think that's completely wrong. We're working on grad programs. We're working with talented professionals that are probably the best in the country, should I say. And these are nationals, because I work with the government here, and, you know, the caliber of staff that they have are exceptional. Mm. The new ones that are coming through the grad programs are, again, exceptional. There isn't, you know, I think half the time companies think, where do we place them? It's an extra cost. What they don't see them is actually it's an added resource to your team. So I think companies, they do exist. They are there. NAFIS is definitely helping. I think now there's, they believe there's, I think, 90,000 UAE nationals working in private sectors now. And the target is to go up 12,000 each year.
I mentioned a little earlier on, you're working closely with the likes of ADIO, Emirates NBD as well, EMBD, on the Emiratization projects that they are implementing at present. I mean, we're talking sort of top tiers up there, and therefore one would suggest that the roles that they're offering are very attractive as well. Are there salary demands of Emiratis coming into the workforce?
The biggest challenge is always going to be salaries for any nationals. But I mean, we're working with the likes of, you know, top tier firms as well as, you know, FMCGs, which is looking for mostly grads and entry level roles, which can develop these candidates. But the ones for the likes of the top tier governments, they are looking for highly skilled. I mean, these are people from consulting backgrounds, people that have been to the top 100 universities in the world. And I think that's one of their criteria, is that they need to employ people that are on top of their game. You can't just walk into these entities with not having over 3.5 GPA score, top 100 university. So, you know, these nationals do exist. And that's what I want to say. You know, a lot of times we think, oh, no, they're not. But there is exceptional talent out there. And I've worked with many 30-year-olds, 40, 50-year-olds nationals that are very impressive.
One of the things we've heard whilst discussing these initiatives in the past is, oh, yeah, you know, it's just a box that I need to tick, etc. I will do that accordingly, etc. And then we will avoid the fines. Listen, I think the fact that we're talking about it at the moment, the fact that we're seeing those fines now being implemented, is proof in the pudding that you can't just look at it like that. But what's your advice to employers out there? Why is this a good thing for their business?
The one thing is there's talent here. So the one thing for all clients is talent does exist in the region. So one thing, you know, that benefits all clients are that talent is here. You don't need to go looking for it. It exists. It's helping the economy generally by hiring the UAE nationals. It's doubling GDP, and these talent does exist. The problem that happens is a lot of companies see them as a cost, and that's what they're not are. And I think as soon as clients start thinking of them as employees and they can do the job and they are right for the job, all of a sudden, it's not a cost for you. So right now, when you speak to companies, a lot of times think, oh, it's an added cost to our business. And the reality is, it's not an added cost. Yes, you know, there's a lot of other things that you need to, you know, but that's for even expats now. Flexibility in the workplace is needed, just general well-being. And I think when clients start to embrace this, it's going to be better for the economy generally. But I think the biggest, I mean, one thing we didn't touch on, I think the biggest rule change now, and I think a lot of clients that we found, everyone knew about the 50 employees plus rule, which was 2% target. The one that we came across was the SMEs, and that's classed between 20 and 49 employees. Now, they also have a target of hiring one national in 2024 and one in 2025, and there's violation penalties up to 100,000 dirhams for not complying. So
we will address that one in due course as well. Big thanks to you, Jazz, for bringing that up. A big thanks for you for popping into the studio as well. Jazz Sanger is the Managing Director of Mackenzie Jones Solutions. Joining us live.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Come down the Big Tent Revival.
Summonomics continues on the Business Breakfast, and right now, actually, it's not just Summonomics, but it is one of our favourite subgroups of the genre, and that is Tentonomics, a woman who we have spoken to before about the business of erecting a tent, is Minnie Wallington, Commercial Director at the Arena Group. Morning, Minnie.
Good morning. How are you all?
We are well. We last spoke to you about Ramadan tents. In
yes.
quite a different situation because Ramadan was in the winter this year.
Yes, it was. So there was a lower requirement for structures as everyone was sitting outside and enjoying the weather.
But now we are into steamy season and we have had an awful lot of hotel and restaurant openings since the temperatures hit this point last time last year. Has the demand for tents increased as a result?
Unfortunately not, and I believe that it's a combination of things. A lot of the restaurants, venues, hotels are looking at a more sustainable option, which gives them also a higher ROI. What they're looking at now is bespoke structures. So what we've done a couple of is closing in balconies, terraces with a very simple sort of frame and covering, and then an AC you can just plug in. So it negates the need for power, external generator power.
Okay, that sounds like it's better long run for the environment, no?
Absolutely, because it's something that can be taken down, stored, and then reused again the next year. So the big sort of tents in summer, not so much anymore. But it's more the sort of bespoke, reusable structures that people are going for.
What does that mean for you as a business?
We have to diversify, we have to pivot, and it's not your frame and canvas that gets popped up on the beach every year. We now have to work with our clients, looking at materials that are, you know, sustainable, like a desert board, which is made from palm fronds, and seeing how we can work from a production standpoint rather than just a tent frame and canvas, and then we install that for them, take it down, and then reuse it and build it the next year.
What does it do to the cost of the structure?
The initial outlay is a little bit higher because obviously you're making it new that first year, but the subsequent years it's better for the client because they're then just paying for the storage, any touch-ups or any sort of changes that need to be done, and the reinstallation of it. So it's a lot better for a client in the long run, but it also just keeps us ticking over the summer.
Talk to me about when what we used to see these things go up. Were people really getting something entirely new every year?
In terms of the tents? Yes. In that, yes, your tent stays the same, but what clients loved doing year on year was changing the interiors and the look and feel and creating something new and exciting every year to offer their clients, their guests. So with a bespoke structure, it kind of stays the same. They just extend their existing restaurant or bar, they then don't have that new design look and feel, which is different from previous years when it was done inside structures.
Do these things go through trends?
They do, but I think this is going to be something that stays. People are very self-conscious about the environment and want to be more sustainable. So they're very focused on that, which is a very good thing given how the climate is changing globally. So I think this is something that's going to stay.
What about the structures themselves, though? I mean, do we have, I guess, fashions in a temporary structure?
Yes. We get inquiries of, please, may I have a tent, but I don't want it to look like a tent, which is a common theme. So tents are evolving, and if you were ever to get onto a search engine and have a look at different types of tents, you'll be amazed at the variety of styles of structures out there now. So that it does go through different trends.
And what kind of cost, ballpark, I realise we are talking how long is a piece of string, but what kind of money can companies be laying down for these?
Depending on the size, it can be anything from 25,000, 30,000 up to 150,000, 200,000, depending on the space they want to cover.
And where do they store them? If we're reusing these things year after year, are they storing them? Are you storing them?
Some clients like to store it themselves if they have their own facilities. We've had hotels where we have made things for them and they store it in their own storage. We just come back every year, touch it up, make it look good and reinstall it. Others ask us to store it for them.
The summer is obviously a talking point at the moment. Everyone's having the discussion of saying, well, I don't remember being this hot last year, but as you know, we have this discussion every year. What about the rains, though, the recent rains? Did that mean calls for your office to see what we could do to put up structures to deal with rainy weather?
We did get a few inquiries for people to come for tents so that they could put stuff they'd originally had outside under covering. And it was very much just a frame and canvas. So it wasn't anything sort of pretty. And we had a couple of those go out, but I think it took everyone by surprise. So hopefully, if it should, unfortunately, not to the level it happened this year, obviously, but if it should happen again, then people will be prepared and know what they need.
Is it a potential business for you, though, weather tents?
Absolutely, yes, because a lot of people will have items sitting outside in big yards, and just to have a cover over it, to close it in, to give it some form of protection, absolutely is an option.
Are you working to serve that market? Is this something you're discussing?
Yeah. Yes, it is something that we are discussing internally.
And, of course, the other big tent event that is going...
Tent event?
That's going on at the moment is the football. What does something like that mean for you?
That's an interesting one. Historically, there were a lot of big tents that used to go up down at the Dubai Media City Amphitheatre and all over. Again, what's happening now and what we're finding is people are doing it internally. So, you know, venues like Coca-Cola Arena are hosting it, and bars and restaurants are doing it in-house. It's very few structures. There are a few summer structures up, but they're the kind of the old ones that have been around a while, like down at Barasti. They bought theirs a few years ago, and so they have theirs. But we're finding now it's less going out and having generators and AC and having those outdoor venues. People are tending to stay more indoor and using existing venues.
10 seconds. Do you think that's because they are getting more environmentally conscious?
I think that is a big part of it, and also ROI, the cost.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
Minnie Wellington, tent expert, commercial director at the Arena Group. Thank you for your time.
Thank you both very much.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.